You know, all this week we are celebrating Ulu. We introduced you to a baker yesterday who's discovering what's possible for a fruit that just keeps giving. And today you get to meet who many consider the mother of the breadfruit movement. For Diane Rangoni, her passion for Ulu started with a college research paper. She divides her time between Kauai and Maui, where she, for decades, she's worked as the director of the Breadfruit Institute at the National Tropical Botanical Garden, where numerous varieties of Ulu grow.
I became involved in breadfruit knowing nothing about it. I moved to Hawaii in 1979, and then I sampled it once, and then I was a graduate student at the University of Hawaii in the horticulture department, interested in tropical fruits, and I decided to write a paper for a class on breadfruit in Tahiti, where it's an important center, and it was from that paper I wrote, where I went to the UH library, which has this incredible collection, the Pacific Collection, and found all this wonderful, interesting information about breadfruit, its uses, the cultural, the historical aspect. And from that, I decided that is what I wanted to do for my PhD. I wanted to study breadfruit varieties in the Pacific Islands.
So what is it about the history, I think, that you've just found, I guess, the most interesting?
The history I found so interesting was just how widely grown breadfruit was throughout the Pacific Islands and how important it was culturally and as a staple food for so many Pacific Islanders for centuries. And the thing that interested me at that time, because it was so new to me, was I was interested in plant introductions. And so the thing about breadfruit was there was interest right after in the 1920s and then again right after World War II from botanists and scientists recognizing that traditional crops and cultivation practices in the Pacific Islands were at risk and that varieties of breadfruit and other crops were in danger of disappearing. And so I approached it from that perspective, this need to collect and conserve and document breadfruit diversity.
Did they have much at Bishop Museum that you could use in your research?
Bishop Museum has had excellent resources as well, but mostly with the University of Hawaii, the library collections there, because they have a lot of agriculture-related materials that the Bishop Museum would not have. And Hawaii has one variety of breadfruit traditionally. So it's fascinating for me to learn that there were places in the Pacific that had documented 50, 60, even 100 varieties of breadfruit.
And then you've tasted them all, and you have favorites.
So my work was not just to collect the varieties and document them, but to collect propagating material, because it was a conservation effort to conserve these traditional varieties. So I planted the trees at the National Tropical Botanical Garden, Kahanu Garden, Maui, and over the years, as the trees grew and started fruiting, we were able to document and do research on the collection. But yes, I harvested and sampled the different varieties to see what they were like. So every time I would go to Hana, I live on Kauai, I would harvest 3, 4, 5 different varieties and just steam them and cook them and eat them and see how they tasted. So,
and your favorites?
My favorites, is it like picking which child's your favorite? I have three to five favorites. So there are a couple of them are Samoan varieties. One is called Puo, and it's a variety that's been in Hawaii for at least 100 years. There's another Samoan variety called Ma'afala, and that's a variety I like very much. They're both very flavorful. They are both very nutritious. There's a very unusual variety that I was able to rescue from an abandoned breadfruit conservation collection in Samoa. It's from Rotuma, and its name is Ulufiti, which means from Fiji. And then there are a couple of the Micronesian varieties that are, you're from Guam, Lamai?
Lamai.
The Micronesian varieties from mainly Ponape and Chuuk. In 2011, with the Hawaii Homegrown Food Network, the Breadfruit Institute launched a program called Ho'ulu Ka'ulu to revitalize breadfruit in Hawaii. So we did five festivals on two islands, many workshops, cooking demonstrations, and so a way to encourage and make people more aware of breadfruit and also making trees available. So you know, and getting the nurseries to propagate trees. So that was an important part of it too. You have to have the trees available. So tens of thousands of trees have been planted in Hawaii in the past decade through these efforts. And now all these people now have access to fruit they didn't before. And so the farmers need entrepreneurs, they need businesses to develop products. So that's what we're seeing now through these cook-offs and these other activities. Entrepreneurs like Tom and other people throughout Hawaii are starting, and chefs, can't forget the chefs, are using breadfruit and putting it on their menus. People are making products. So we're seeing new novel food products and seeing breadfruit used in restaurants and more in homes. And the thing that's most dear to my heart is this economic development is so important. We need to diversify agriculture in Hawaii, and this is an important cultural crop that could do so. But local family and community food security and self-sufficiency, and having more breadfruit trees planted in more yards and more communities like the Haula community, where then a family can harvest and eat fruit, and excess fruit they can give to their friends or their family, sell it, so that there is that local abundance, not just a commercial opportunity.
Now, I grew up eating breadfruit with coconut milk, just baked, and that's that, I think, and maybe chips is really the only way I've had it. But to have the bread today, the bagels, the pizza, I mean, it just takes it to a whole nother level. You know, the hummus, you know, all these wonderful, you know, the spreads. It really is. It's amazing what you can do with it.
It is. It's such a versatile crop because I can't think of anything like it. If you think about it, it's a potato on a tree when it's at starchy, mature stage. And you can do so much with it, and the pastries and the breads, as well as a starch and a pasta substitute. But when it's small and immature, it's a completely different food. And that's when you can marinate it and make pickles out of it. But then it is a fruit, so it turns soft and sweet and ripe and creamy. And at that stage, you can do completely different things with it. So it's usable at every stage of development. And all it takes is kind of playing around with it and creativity to make things out of it.
Gosh, where would you like to see this go? I mean, you've got folks on different islands that are experimenting with it. I think you had mentioned in one of the breadfruit summits, they talked about skincare products.
Well, we're at, the beginning of really looking at breadfruit as more than just a backyard crop. But I think it's very important that it also remain and that it be a backyard crop. But for economic development, commercialization, yes, you do need more people growing it. Is flour a feasible thing to do with it, with the costs of production and the labor involved in making flour? Is it a feasible product to make in Hawaii? A lot of people are interested in breadfruit flour because it is gluten-free. But breadfruit is gluten-free, so you don't have to turn it into flour to get the gluten-free benefits. So you'll see from what Tom is doing here at the bakery, he's not using flour. He's not taking it to the step of making flour. He's processing the mature starchy fruit and using it as his dough base.
There's another business owner, I guess, down the way from here that I hear is making vodka.
Yes, there's someone making vodka. So with every crop and as you're using it, there will be, you know, challenges of the supply chain and supply and demand. So the Hawaii Ulu Cooperative on the Big Island, and they're growing and they're exploring what does it take, you know, to get that supply chain. So there are things for Hawaii that will be appropriate and feasible and scalable island by island. And then for the Pacific, it is, you know, conserving these traditional varieties and replanting and growing breadfruit in these traditional systems and farming more breadfruit. And then in other parts of the world, there's a lot of interest in breadfruit. And so I would like to see hundreds of thousands of breadfruit trees planted around the world and people using and growing more breadfruit.
I guess the big question that I always get just from friends or neighbors, you know, they see this in the market or someone gives it to them and they're like, what do I do with this thing?
Well, there's that fear factor. And I frequently give our workshops and the festivals and other events presentations on breadfruit. How do you handle it? And so it's that educational component. And what we did through the Ha'ulu Ka'ulu Crop Project and the Hawaii Homegrown Food Network is what kind of informational resource materials to make available. You know, we did a breadfruit cookbook. We did a breadfruit production guide. fact sheets and informational resources like that. So it's that educational piece about what to do with it. And I think the most important thing is to pick the fruit, harvest the fruit at the right stage of development and handle it that way. And right now I have three breadfruit that were picked about 3 days ago and I wasn't ready to cook them. So sometimes if I have room in my refrigerator, I will put a breadfruit in the fridge. And I had one in there, the Ulufiti, for more than a week. And when I pulled it out, the skin was all brown, but it was fine. It was still firm and starchy. So that's one way to slow down it getting soft. And also there wasn't the sticky sap that can be on a fruit. But this week I have three fruit that I'm not ready to cook until this week. And so when I brought them home, I just put them in a plastic bag in a small trash can. I filled that trash can with water and had a nice blue ice pack. So I put that in there to cool it a little bit and then covered it up. And those fruits, as long as there's no air in there, as long as you can put a weight on them so they are covered, they'll last 3-4 days in water. And a traditional way, you'll see that in the Pacific Islands, people will store, put breadfruit in water for a day or 2 to 3. So when I pull those out, there'll be no sticky sap or latex on them, and I'll just, you know, steam them up and do something with them.
It is an amazing fruit, though. It really is. So what's next for you? A book?
What's next for me is, yes, it's really like to start focusing a lot more on writing a couple of scientific papers that are kind of a culmination of a lot of the research I've been doing for almost a decade with a collaborator. But then books, I'd really like to write. I was going to write one book, but then I decided, well, yeah, I actually have three books, so I just need to start with that first one. And then helping continue on with this, you know, breadfruit movement that's happened in Hawaii and around the world.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to your books.
Haha, thank you.
And that was a conversation we had with who many regard as the mother of the breadfruit movement, Diane Rangoni. There are many people like Diane in Hawaii who want to put ulu on the map, creating ulu festivals and more. Some are working toward an international stage, the World Expo in Dubai, that was to happen next month. Because of COVID-19, the exhibition has now been postponed to 2021. But some believe the power of ulu would fit into the theme of connecting minds in creating our future.